This is an MUT Radio podcast.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Today I'm joined by one of our emerging and soon to be established researchers, Ms. Thembane. Before we start talking about your research and your trajectory as an academic, please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Greetings to the viewers and greetings to you, Vice Chancellor. Thank you for having me today. My name is Mukanya Thembane and I'm born and bred here in KZN. I am a trained medical lab scientist and technologist. I was trained here in Mangosuthu as a medical technologist, and I also followed with doing my BTEC here at Mangosuthu, and I did my master's degree at TUT. And then I also did my master's in business administration and a postgraduate diploma in educational management and leadership, all cum laude. I am currently enrolled for a PhD in medical biochemistry with University College London and UKZN. So that's where I'm pursuing my research, which is still within the medical laboratory sciences.
All right. I have also interviewed other researchers, and what sets you apart from them is the fact that, one, you are our own, grow your own timber. You were a student and then you became a lecturer. Now you're a senior lecturer. You're registered for your PhD and you're on track. And I really want to congratulate you for that. But having said that, let's now change gears a little bit and talk about your research niche area and your academic trajectory in the process. Your research is interesting because it intersects indigenous knowledge systems, biomedical sciences, and innovation. What inspired you to undertake this kind of research?
Okay, thank you. That's a very interesting question. So in the curriculum of medical laboratory science, these are the people that are actually taught on how to diagnose disease.
Right.
So for every disease that you have in the hospital, when they take your samples, they send them to us. So during my undergrad, when I was being taught here in Mangosuthu, we were taught that there's a disease, this is how you diagnose, and these are the antibiotics or the medication that a person takes. Mm-hmm. But in the curriculum, there wasn't anything that spoke to the indigenous knowledge systems or the herbal medicines that we as African people usually always resort to or start from when we are sick. So then because I understood the mechanisms of the medications that were being taught in biomedical sciences, I then became curious as to how did these plants work and bring about an alleviation of cough, for example, or heal a wound. So that's how my inspiration started. And then when I started off here in Mangosuthu as a junior lecturer, I was also privileged to have mentors that really cultivated that curiosity, and they matched me with people that were in the space of African traditional medicine. Yeah. At that time, I was under the mentorship of the late Professor Guillaume Daung, who, together with her, we started researching umhlabelo. Umhlabelo is the herb or the mixture of herbs that is used when you have broken a bone and then you use it to heal. So we then looked at how it works and how it works to regenerate broken bone. And that's how I started having interest in that. And it has grown from that until now. But then Professor Mutong had a philosophy to say, it's good to be a publishing scholar, but remember, you are always a public health servant because you are board certified scientist. You were trained to diagnose disease, but now we are training you to find things that are going to mitigate those diseases. So you have a responsibility to say, after you've published that paper, it must be translatable to something, a product or a service that can help the health sector. And that's how biomedical sciences, African indigenous knowledge systems, and innovation intersects.
Wow, that's interesting. Why should the scientific community and the broader public pay attention to research on African traditional medicine and indigenous knowledge systems at this particular moment in history.
Prof, you remember during COVID, there was a pandemic and everyone was panicking.
Right.
And even when the vaccine started, the countries that are first world countries, they prioritized their own populations. And here in Africa, what we were doing, we were using Artemisia, remember?
Mm-hmm.
So it was clear at that moment that when there's a crisis or a pandemic, Africa will always be last in line.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd have to resort to its own ways of healing and knowledge systems. It is at that moment that, as researchers, the notion of African traditional medicine and the efficacy of herbal medicine was then looked upon with so much great interest. So it is very important that we don't negate this very rich intellectual a collection of knowledge that may alleviate so many of our health issues. For instance, with the funding, the international funding from the US and all the funding agencies being withdrawn, so much of our people cannot afford the Western medication.
Yeah.
So we then, because we have the training on how to do pharmaceutical research, apply these sophisticated methods, maths, and biological methods to see if a drug works or not, or if a drug is efficient or not efficient, why not apply it to something that has been used for centuries but doesn't have scientific evidence?
Mm.
So it is very important. If we neglect it, we are neglecting a possible patents, possible drug solutions. Most of the drugs that we have on the market have been derived from natural products.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, there's a drug that is used for heart failure, digoxin. It is plant derived. Metformin, a drug that is used for management of type 2 diabetes. It is plant derived. Penicillin that you use in your antibiotics, it is plant derived. So imagine if we really invested and we looked not so much on things that are not affordable and not accessible for our people, and we investigated what is already existing, what has already been tested and tried with anecdotal evidence, and we put the sophisticated biomedical science knowledge that we've been trained in to elevate it and also to advocate for its inclusion into the health system.
Wow. You know, I keep on thinking, going back to the pandemic, and thinking maybe there are also going to be other pandemics, and maybe that is where your argument, I think, really holds water to say, let's not stop this work and let's not neglect our own medicinal processes or plants.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, evaluating medicinal plants used by communities for generations is a good way to go about it because we have that rich history.
Mm-hmm.
What impact could this research have on healthcare outcomes, drug discovery, and public health in South Africa?
Knowing that a certain medicinal preparation or plant works without any biological efficacy studies and evidence does not assist. We take your word for it, yes, but because I'm a scientist, my work is evidence-based.
Mm.
If we provide scientific validation for the efficacy of our medicinal plants, and we provide safety, because just because something is natural does not mean that it is devoid of any side effects, because your body needs to still get metabolize it, use it up, and excrete what it doesn't need. So we need to evaluate the safety. What does it do to your lungs, your kidneys? What does it do to your general health? And after that, we need to also ensure that if we find it to be efficacious, we need to ensure that it is within the regulatory frameworks, because we are dealing with human life. And again, remember I said, I'm bound by Health Professions Council to serve and protect.
Yeah.
So if even though I'm a researcher, but I still serve the public in the health sector. So I need to ensure that it's within the regulatory frameworks before we can even move it to human beings to use it. So that's why it is important. And also with regards to the use of medicinal plants, some people think just because something works and has been tested to work, let's say ginger, using ginger for your flu, it works. It alleviates the flu symptoms. But some people then think if I increase the dose, then it's going to work faster.
Yeah.
The body does not work like that. It has an expected dosage. And the dosage that Bab Dlamini, Bab Umthetho uses for his medication cannot be the dosage that we say works for everybody.
Yeah.
As a result, we need to do the scientific research to also establish which dosage is efficacious, which one brings about the desired therapeutic effect, and which one does not give the desired therapeutic effect. So that's why the research is in this area is very important. And furthermore, when you are developing a drug, you test it in the lab. Then after testing it in the lab, then you take it to animal models. You want to check how it works in the body. After taking it to animal models, then you start what is known as clinical trials, which also moves in certain phases, right? But there's another thing that drug discovery research hasn't covered sufficiently. A drug that works in a Black American and a drug that is given to a Black South African cannot and should not be working the same because we have a different genetic makeup. The climate, the food that we eat also has an impact on how drugs are absorbed, distributed, metabolized, and excreted in our bodies. So all those things are broad and very important areas for research with regards to this topic.
MET, now I'm coming back home. MET is committed to producing knowledge that addresses real societal challenges. And your work is also evidence of that. How can institutions of higher learning contribute to preserving, validating, and advancing indigenous knowledge systems while maintaining scientific rigor? But also maybe as part of your response, because in some instances, not in all, in some instances, we still think that there isn't a role that can be played by indigenous knowledge systems because maybe we have an attitude towards indigenous knowledge systems. How then can we one, create awareness and efficacy of IKS, but also the first question on validation and advancing IKS.
All right. So one of the foundational philosophies and frameworks of working within this sector is first not approaching the sector as a biomedical scientist and also the university not as an ivory tower that is a custodian of all sorts of knowledge. First things first. And secondly, it's also recognizing that there are other forms of knowing and knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that the only knowledge, the knowledge that we have as a university is not the only valid knowledge that is there. So that then invites a conversation of traditional health practitioners and herbalists and anyone that works with natural products as a knowledge co-creator. Instead of a person that comes and tests my things and then says they are valid or not. But if we establish that relationship first, let the herbalist and the person that has the know-how be a knowledge co-creator with us. So we have done that in this university before, where we had a traditional medicine symposium, where we had a conversations with the traditional healers. They shared their knowledge. We shared our knowledge and what we had done in testing in the lab and validating some of their claims and said some of their claims a traditional healer would say, my product can heal HIV and AIDS. Sometimes when we test it in the lab, it doesn't necessarily heal HIV and AIDS, but it has an immunomodulatory effect, meaning it's an immune booster, allows the body to be able to fight off the virus. You see, so it is only in those platforms that we are able to conversate with the healers and the knowledge holders. And if and universities are custodians of knowledge, and if we approach it like that, then there'll be more that can be done. We can move from papers to product and to the market.
Yes, indeed. Talk about moving from paper to product to market. South Africa possesses a rich biodiversity and a wealth of indigenous medicinal knowledge. What opportunities exist for translating this knowledge into innovation, but most importantly, entrepreneurship and economic development?
All right. So there are so many, there's so many products that can be formulated from natural products. But as I've explained, that it takes a lot of rigorous testing because these are human lives. At the end of the day, you don't want to bring the university to disrepute, to waste public funds that you use for research. But there's an opportunity to developing functional foods, nutraceuticals, cosmeceuticals from indigenous knowledge systems, which is part of the research that we do as well here in the university. There's also an opportunity to not necessarily develop a physical product, but a service of testing for toxicology, testing for side effects of certain natural products that are already commercialized by other individuals. So there are many things that can be done, but it's just that when it comes to biomedical related research, sometimes the researchers and the innovators themselves may take it may be disheartened because it takes a while to get to that product or service stage because of the regulatory framework, which is understandable as to why it's applied. But there is it's a blue ocean. There's so much opportunity that is under explored. And also Mangosuthu being the university that prides itself in being anchored in its community, we have an opportunity to actually collaborate with our communities and become knowledge co-creators with them. Furthermore, we are not just contributing to Mangosuthu. We are contributing to the white paper on science, contributing to DHET expectations, and also contributing to the sustainable development goals. So our research is not just on health only, but also we are creating an opportunity for employment. And also we are creating an opportunity for partnership, both locally and internationally.
Wow. Now, do you foresee a future where African traditional medicine and conventional healthcare work more closely together? And what would meaningful integration look like, in your opinion?
Yeah. In other countries, in other countries such as China, you have an option to go to a complementary medicine practitioner or a GP, and you can get a letter of referral from this one to the next. Even though in South Africa, we are doing research on it, and in our research group, we are working with social science, biomedical sciences, pharmacists, bioinformatics specialists, and chemists, and so forth, to ensure that we get to that point. In South Africa, that is still in its infancy, because at the moment, you can't come to a doctor with a referral from a traditional healer. But the traditional healer, according to the studies that we've conducted, does accept a doctor's report from the Western medicine practitioner. There is room to collaborate, but again, first things first, conversation. Let's understand your healing processes. How do you bring about healing as much as your Western medication is understood? So there is room for collaboration, but the approach should not be we are eliminating Western medication as if it doesn't work, it has not worked. Biomedical science ways of healing are exceptional. But what we are saying is there's also this which can complement. Mm. Perhaps if I'm taking medication for something that gives side effects of nausea, maybe there's a herbal medicine that I can take to alleviate that. They can complement each other. We are not saying eliminate it. We're saying complement. But in South Africa, it's still in its infancy, and also the regulatory frameworks are not so friendly as compared to countries that have been successful in implementing them.
You have received national and continental recognition for your research contributions. What has your experience been like as a woman researcher? And what message would you share with the young women aspiring to careers in science and innovation?
I think that has been quite humbling for me to get recognition for my research, because as a young researcher, you deal with a lot of imposter syndrome. So, but what I've learned is that the journey is, it requires you to be patient. Yeah. The journey requires you to be curious. What it takes for you to be a scientist is just a constant state of being curious. You must constantly ask why. And also be teachable. Be teachable. Have a heart to learn. The zeal and the energy of being young is good, but there's space for it. There's space for you to apply your energy. There's space for you to calm yourself down, absorb the knowledge like a sponge, and be teachable. And it has been one of the strongest thing that has enabled my progression, is that I have a teachable spirit. So, and that has helped me to attract various sponsors and supporters and mentors. And those people, even when I had the imposter syndrome, they would encourage me and say, there's space for you. There is no scarcity. Just allow the process. Don't rush. Mm-hmm. Allow the process. And for young women, there's space. There's sufficient space. But we understand that if you come from a background where perhaps you've been excelling scientifically and getting awards, but very important, stay grounded. Yeah. With all those awards, you have to stay grounded and be teachable. That gets you very far in life. And that has worked for me.
I agree with that. As both a lecturer and researcher, how are you contributing to the development of future scientists and innovators here at MUT?
I'm a passionate researcher. I love my research, and I've been taught that research must respond to community needs first. Mm-hmm. But I'm also a social justice teacher.
Right.
I believe that our research must address our social ills. Mm-hmm. And so through supervision, through mentorship, through lab training, and also through the research projects that we do in our department, I ensure that I teach the students to say, don't just do research for research sake, but do research that, one, you can teach your community. Two, you can apply and solve problems that are within your community. So research and teaching, I don't separate them. That's one. And of late, we have been also implementing the entrepreneurial mindset to say, you have this knowledge of biomedical sciences, and there are so many social issues with regards to employment and graduate employability with the advent of AI and so forth. How about you use this scientific knowledge to innovate and come up with biomedical products from the sections and the chapters that we teach you in class, from the research that we inculcate in you so that you're not just a researcher. You have been taught, you do research, but that research can be translatable to entrepreneurship. So that's how I've married those three pillars.
Wow. And when you reflect on the growing research culture at MUT, what opportunities does the institution offer for emerging researchers who wish to pursue impactful and globally recognized or relevant research?
MUT is a fertile ground. The university prides itself as one of the most respected SET universities. Mm-hmm. And even though our research has so much room for improvement, but it is a fertile ground. And there are so many enablers here, from your research office, mm-hmm. the research directorate. They're always giving out calls, and also the technology transfer office. They're always giving us calls, and including the LTDC, mm-hmm. where they help you to form an identity as an academic, firstly. Mm-hmm. Even though you come in as an expert, whether you're an engineer or a scientist, you form an identity as a teacher. Once you form an identity as a teacher, you then know, how am I going to apply my expert knowledge in research and in entrepreneurship? So the university has so much funding is available, support on how to transition from being an engineer or a scientist to a teaching expert is available, and support on how to translate those things to products or whatever else you want to formulate. There's the TTO office. So I think don't stay in your corner. That's what is important. Mm. When the calls come out, you apply. And when workshops are being called, you go there. Even though it's a language that is different from your expertise, you go there. Because you may find that that's exactly what you need for you to start with your research career. With that being said as well, the people and the senior staff members within Mangosuthu, they're very willing to assist and take you through the journey, as long as you have what I said, a teachable heart. Mm. And it is such an environment that is enabling. The world is your oyster. There's no limits. You are able to go as far as you are willing to look for help and to receive the help. So that has been my experience.
What is your long-term vision for African traditional medicine? And what legacy would you like your research and academic contributions to leave for future generations?
You know, I would like to see African traditional medicine and herbal medicine as respected and not seen as something that is primitive, done by people that are not maybe academically inclined or excellent. Mm-hmm. Because we are here. We are trained scientists, board certified, and we are doing it. We are studying it. We need to, I would like to see it as respected. I would like to see it has accorded the same respect as other forms of medicine, of medicines. And also, what would make me very happy is that we develop researchers that are not only adopting the research agenda for personal gain, understanding that when you have chosen a niche area, you have taken a vision or a mission that is beyond yourself. Mm-hmm. Understand that being a researcher means that you are a voice for people that are voiceless. So I would like to leave that legacy to say, Nokukhanya Thembane did biomedical research on African traditional medicine, and she was advocating for its safe, ethical implementation into the existing health system.
Thank you very much. This was a really interesting and brilliant conversation. And I ask that you please, engage all the emerging researchers, not only in your faculty, but across the board. Mm. And so that when they look at you, they then see that there's a future for them as well,
mm.
as academics, but mm-hmm. also of particular importance as researchers.
Mm.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Prof. Maybe to conclude, we have a network of young researchers,
mm-hmm.
And we have established several international MOUs,
right.
That I'm presiding over.
Mm.
We are taking 15 researchers into a public health conference paid for by Mangosuthu. And we are going there to showcase the research that is done by Mangosuthu. And we are also taking 10 researchers to an international conference that has been organized with UP, which I am part of the local organizing committee there. This just goes to show that Mangosuthu has brilliant minds.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much that can be done. And I'm very hopeful for the future.
I think the future looks bright.
Yes, thank it is. You.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Whew. Ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the end of our conversation.
This is an NUT Radio podcast.